Welcome to the conversation from a man's perspective. This is the place where we dialogue about religion, politics, relationships, dating, and social issues. The purpose of our conversations are to stimulate positive communication, thus creating a more harmonious atmosphere. Under the umbrella of Black Pearl Image Consulting, we also hold self-esteem building workshops with powerful motivational speakers to get you to the next level. Here at Black Pearl Image, we bring out the gem in you because we focus on the inner image first and the rest will follow. So check us out at blackpearlimage.com and book your next intimate conversation with one of our panelists. Also, a self-esteem building workshop with our motivational speakers. See you there.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another conversation from a man's perspective. I am your host, Levanna Forrest. And today we have two very special guests, Christopher Dinkins of Columbia, South Carolina, and James Ford of Charlotte, North Carolina. But before we get to our topic today, we're going to share with you our word for the week. We're going to talk from Proverbs 13 through 18. The one who despises instruction will pay the penalty, but whoever esteems instruction will be rewarded. Instruction from the wise is like a life-giving fountain to turn a person from deadly snares. Keen insight wins favor, but the conduct of the unfaithful is harsh. Every shrewd person acts with knowledge, but a fool displays his folly. An unreliable messenger falls into trouble, but a faithful envoy brings healing. The one who neglects discipline ends up in poverty and shame, but the one who accepts reproof is honored. Let's take this for the week and meditate on it. And as we start our conversation, you will see why we chose that scripture. And before, let's go ahead and have our prayer. Father, we come today giving you honor and praise. Lord, we ask that this program shows up in a mighty way. May it bless those listening today and in the future. And Lord, we thank you for our guests. May you bless them richly as they use their gifts to bless us. Amen. So, James, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Awesome. And Christopher, James, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, right here.
Wow. I am so excited about the two of you. I have been really meditating and praying over the two of you, and I just feel it in my spirit that once you two join forces, I'm telling you, South Carolina and North Carolina, better step back and watch out. For James, I would like you to introduce yourself, and then I'll ask Christopher to introduce himself after you're done. Tell us a little bit about who you are, James.
Sure. Name is James Ford. I'm a high school teacher in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District at Garinger High School. I teach world history, which is primarily a freshman class, originally from Rockford, Illinois. Relocated to Charlotte 3 years ago, and 32-year-old family man who enjoys the field of education.
All right. Awesome. And Christopher?
Well, I am also working in a high school setting at the Career and Technology Center, which most people know as the old vocational school. But we're trying to change that name and change that image that today's vocational school is not your daddy's vocation. Very different. I am right now, just finished my 12th year in education. 5 years in the classroom where I taught a business ed class, and then the last 7 as an administrator. I didn't start out in education. I actually started out in accounting, so that was a little bit of a change for me getting into education and being able to use what I gained on the private side, on the private sector side, in the classroom and in the school.
Okay, awesome. Now, everyone, today's show is called, Will the Real Education System Please Stand Up? And I've had a little stumble there. Will the real education system please stand up? So we want to talk with Christopher and James about their take on education. What are some of the realities that they face every day that we don't see? Especially now, my children are all grown up. I do have a grandson, and he's just entering into the system, so they can give people like me some insight. Those who actually in the system, maybe they can hold the hands of those and let them know that we hear you, and probably answer some questions of any guests who like to call in about what's going on in the system itself. Now, to get us started, Chris, tell me, who inspired you to be an educator?
I actually never planned on being a teacher. When I did start to think that education was something that I might want to do, I started to have those images of some of my business ed teachers from high school. There were a couple, there was three or four in the department. And also we had one math teacher in particular, Mr. Pompey, and one social studies teacher who were really instrumental in kind of getting me back on the right track, if you will. I spent most of my childhood in elementary and middle school on the honor roll, and then went through that period at about 14 where nothing seemed to matter, and I fell to basically a D student. Somewhere around my junior year into my sophomore year, some of these teachers kind of, I started to listen to what they were saying and kind of got serious about education again and kind of fell back into where I should have been.
Oh, awesome. You said you're a math teacher? One of the people that inspired you?
Math teacher and the business department. There were three teachers in the business department at Aiken High School.
Okay, all right. What did your math teacher do in particular that made you stop and think?
Well, he was one of the few black men teaching at our school, and he didn't have a problem with pulling you into his classroom and telling you, hey, look, I don't know what this is you think you turned in, but it's not work. You can have this back, and I'll take the real work. And he also pulled us in, a group of students, and kind of had us, you know, introduce us to his alma mater, Suwannee University, just out of Atlanta, just outside of Atlanta, and told us that we really needed to think about, you know, where we were going to college, and it really needed to be a school that was going to be challenging for us, and that we shouldn't shrink away or shy away from the difficult classes, and then picking some of the things we were taking in high school, and also looking forward to the future.
Right. We didn't want you to just skate by.
Right.
Good. Excellent. James, what about you? Who inspired you to be an educator?
I can't really narrow it down to one specific person. I guess I'll answer the question by rephrasing it and saying perhaps what inspired me, because really it was my journey that inspired me to become an educator. I had no intention, similar to Chris, in being an educator. I didn't see myself in that capacity. It wasn't what I went to school for initially. I went to school to become a journalist. I had a handful of really great teachers that left a major impression upon me. But similar to Chris, once again, I struggled academically. And it wasn't because I lacked intelligence. I lacked focus. I didn't care. I didn't see the relevance of the educational system in my life and the things that I aspired to do. And once I finally awoken around my junior year in high school and I got into college life, I finally understood, you know what, I'm actually pretty smart when I apply myself. And furthermore, I recognize that this educational system as it is kind of a, you know, it's an obstacle course that we all have to go through in order to attain what we want, obtain our goals. And once I stepped out of that arena of journalism and had my whole hope set on becoming a writer, I realized, you know what, this is not really my calling. Doors kept shutting, and I realized after working with kids consistently, that I wanted to be the teacher that I never had. You know, I wanted to be the person that I needed to hear from when I was a junior in high school, slacking off, not paying attention. I wanted to be that guy. And after doing some volunteer work, and I ran my own teen center for a little while, I said, I'm gonna make working with kids my career. And so I went back to school, and I got my master's of arts in teaching, and I became an educator and have not looked back since. It was the absolute best decision I could have made. And, a tremendously fulfilling vocation for me.
Yes, and I have to share that everyone, James is Charlotte Mecklenburg's Teacher of the Year 2013 for the district. Ooh. And I have to applaud you. That's absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and
congratulations.
Yes, and just
Thank
hearing you,
you
say that, you know, it comes out through what you do. You know, you believed it, and you actually walk that walk. And I'm sure the children whose lives you've touched will thank you forever. It's amazing.
Well,
so tell me,
well,
James,
that's my prayer, and I thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, when you decided to shift from journalism to education, did you run into any obstacles on that path?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just because the initial obstacle that I guess was the catalyst for me changing was the lack of jobs in that industry. You know, I fancy myself as a pretty decent writer, love the field, always and still do love words, but the internet had taken over. So, you know, the notion of getting a job at an old newspaper and staying there working for umpteen years, that kind of died out. So I had to search for new work and new ways of providing a livelihood for myself. The transition to actually getting into a school was relatively seamless. I did some research. I went to Rockford College in Rockford, Illinois. Went to a couple open houses, information sessions. But I had some awesome professors, a very rigorous program, people who invested in me on an individual level, and people who I still hold relationships with today and regard as, you know, mentors in my profession. So I would say the difficulty was the thing that propelled me into teaching. And ultimately, in retrospect, I see that as God's work.
Yes, yes. I hear you. That sometimes trials and tribulations are just what we need to get us where we need to be.
That's right. Otherwise, I would have never changed, I'm assuming. So, you know, God knew what was necessary to get my attention and to direct me to the path that I ultimately was supposed to end up. And it's clear to me now that, you know, education is and has always been my calling.
Okay, thank you. And Chris, did you have any obstacles, support from family and friends when you decided to shift?
I did. I did ran into a few obstacles of my own. You know, initially, like I said, I started out in accounting, in corporate accounting, and was at that point in my career where, you know, to climb the corporate ladder, I realized that either I needed an MBA or a CPA. And I decided at that point, trying to figure out which direction I was going, that I don't even like this field. So I'm not going to invest that kind of time and money to be stuck in a field where I'm working 70, 80 hours a week. And I feel like it doesn't matter at all. I'm just a cog in the machine. So transitioned from accounting to found out what was going to be a temporary job, just something to get me through while I was figuring out what I was going to do. A little bit of soul searching at around 30 years old. And ended up working for a fun park, a small amusement park in Greenville, South Carolina, and working with the kids there. We had a lot of high school students. So working with them and ended up becoming more of a counselor than a manager there at the park and working with kids through things at school, prepping the seniors, man, you know, have you started thinking about where you're going to college, have you taken SAT, ACT, and it seems like, no, where do I do this and how do I do that? And I'm asking them, what are your teachers saying? What did the counselors say? And I mean, these kids kept saying, man, they don't care about us. Nobody, I didn't talk to anybody. Nobody came and talked to me. You know, and that was kind of the impetus. And then it kind of hit me, something that my dad had told me when I was just too young to really understand. He said, you know, if you ever find yourself waking up in the morning and you really don't want to go to work, it's time to find a new job.
Yes.
And the thing that you need to do is, what is that one thing in your life that you love so much that you will do it for free? That's what you need to do. You need to figure out a way to get paid doing that. And that's when it hit me. I was doing that for free. I was volunteering at the Y, mentoring with the Youth Association's Black Achievers Program at the Spartanburg Y. I was, even when I was in corporate accounting, I was mentoring a third grader at a nearby elementary school through the Spartanburg Alcohol and Drug Abuse Commission, teaching Sunday school, teaching Bible study, you know, taking in a couple of kids, just working with them. So I'm like, you know, that's what I'm doing for free. I think I want to try education. Well, you know, at the time, from where I was as a manager, salary-wise, to go back into the classroom, I was looking at a 40% pay cut.
Wow.
So you talk about an obstacle. My wife was, you know, was very, very supportive, but she was, you know, she got to eat. we had two kids at the time, and right after we just found out we had two more on a set of twins on the way. I was trying to figure out how am I going to be able to make this thing work? And then figured out on the financial side, okay, I can teach and then still work part-time as a manager, and that would keep my salary the same. But, you know, here we are with this situation of now I'm coming through this alternative certification program because I was an accounting major, a business major. So South Carolina has an alternative certification program, but I was only certified in business or business ed classes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my frustration was at the time trying to find somebody who would interview because I didn't have any teaching background. No teaching classes, no teaching, no kind of pedagogy understanding at all. Mm-hmm. And principals are looking at my resume and like, is this a joke? You know, this guy wants to come into our classrooms. He doesn't know where the classroom is.
Mm.
So I started to get a little bit frustrated. I told my wife, "Is like, how is this in the middle of a teaching shortage? I can't find a teaching job."
Wow.
And fortunately for me, I ended up starting mid-year, starting in October, in a classroom, a business ed classroom, at a career center, and it was probably the best thing for me because if I had gone into a regular high school, I probably wouldn't have the understanding of what the career and technology centers are all about and all that CTE, Career Tech Ed, can provide for students.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. So, you know, both of you, I heard both of you mention mentoring. Either you were mentored by someone that helped to shape your path, or you mentored someone else, and that let you know that this is the direction I would want to go. So with that, when each of you entered into the education system, what realities did you see? Did you see a lack of the mentorship? Share with us what you saw as an educator. James?
I saw lack. I mean, just in a word, lack of a lot of things. Certainly lack of mentorship, lack of resources, lack of attentiveness. Lack of desire, lack of a lot of things, and it was really a shock. It took me a while just to adjust my mind to the state of public education because, you know, we all fancy ourselves as being somewhat young and hip, and it didn't feel like I had been out the classroom for that long. I graduated in 98, you know, so I was like, you know, what's 10, 15 years? And education has changed a whole lot. The classroom looks different. And to be perfectly honest, a lot of my students, I was really surprised by how underprepared they were to receive instruction. And so it just led to a lot of questions as to, okay, how did this happen, right? Because things don't happen in a vacuum. A child is not responsible for educating themselves. So, you know, where is the dysfunction here and how can we fix that? And you saw a lot of people, to be honest, in the educational field who we're just kind of going through the motions, you know, feeling helpless, you know, and kind of throwing their arms up in despair and saying, well, you know, there's nothing we can do. But on the other hand, I paid a lot of attention to the educators who were out there grinding every single day, putting together rigorous lesson plans, forging relationships with their kids, stretching them, encouraging them, letting them know despite their circumstances or despite where they were, that they were going to make it their personal mission to bring them up. And those were the folks that I decided to focus my attention on. And so I would go into their classrooms. I would ask for them to come into my classroom. I would submit my lesson plans to them. I just ask questions. I mean, I would just try to soak up as much information as I could. I know probably I got on some of their nerves because I was just, you know, constantly talking to them. But I gained a lot of valuable information from them, and I realized that, you know, you can't change the way, you know, things are, the way that, you know, the condition the kids come to you in. But it is your responsibility once they come to your classroom to do something about that, you know, and to take them where they're at and make it your mission to bring them up. And so, you know, yeah, I saw lack. I saw a lot of things missing. But once you get over that initial shock, you got to make it your business to work from the point, from your baseline, and to move forward.
Exactly. So with moving forward, No Child Left Behind. Chris, how is that implemented in your school, and is it effective at a career center?
Well, No Child Left Behind it really didn't have a huge impact for us at the career center. It left a lot of the high schools and other districts scrambling, trying to come up with these state tests and these standardized way of doing things. But for us at the career center, since vocational education was really implemented and pushed in the late 60s and early 70s, South Carolina has been one of the leaders in this, and as far as statewide efforts to make sure that things are in place. So in terms of what we saw at the Career Center, No Child Left Behind meant that there were going to be other struggles at the high school and on our feeder schools that didn't really impact our instruction day to day because we were so standardized and we were teaching students skills.
Mm-hmm.
And those skills, though the tools change and the resources and the way the students do their jobs may change a little bit, for the most part, students were still responsible for learning their potential set of skills because we were, giving them introductory level experience for all these different things. You know, the biggest part of No Child Left Behind for me, how it impacted us at the Career Center, was the funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it meant that there were some state funds that were, we used to have access to,
mm-hmm.
but now they're being diverted to other causes and other things that didn't really weren't really going to achieve the effect because No Child Left Behind put all these requirements in place, but there was no additional funding for those things. So states were left on their own to their own devices and ended up pulling money from internal sources and resources that we had used previously.
Okay, interesting. James, did you have the same kind of challenge with monies being pulled from one area to another? How did No Child Left Behind affect the school system
in
your eyes?
Absolutely, because it's what you call an unfunded mandate. You know, so it's, mm-hmm. New standards, new goals, but it's do more with less. And that forces people to, cut the fat, so to speak, in certain areas and, play a shell game with money. And you can end up cutting a lot of prosperous schools and school districts off at the feet doing that. I admire what it was trying to do. I mean, the spirit of it. It was the first attempt in a long time at national educational reform. And so, I mean, I respect that. The other part of that is it turned schooling into teaching to the test. It was all about passing tests, and it wasn't about applying skills, applying knowledge. It was just about, can you pass the test? And that doesn't challenge kids. That doesn't cater to different styles of learning. That doesn't appeal to the strong suits of teachers either. And I'm sure Chris can agree. Our task is to give kids the opportunity to think critically, to problem solve, right, to apply information to real life settings, and it's not about the circle in A or B. And mm-hmm. I feel like No Child Left Behind kind of turned education into that for a number of years.
Right. And let me say this too, LaVanna.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that No Child Left Behind did, and just like James, I do admire the spirit of what it tried to do, because we tried to, for years we've been comparing state to state. This state is better than that state, and which state has the best education system. But it's been apples and oranges, or, even bananas and pineapples. It's been very, very different, dissimilar in terms of how states rank according to what test.
Mm-hmm.
So, even with the spirit of what No Child Left Behind was trying to accomplish, it would have been better suited had there been one national test.
Mm-hmm.
So that we could all compare how mm-hmm. we're doing in terms of instruction across the country versus leaving every state to try and figure out their own way. So in essence, what you ended up with was 50 different versions of No Child Left Behind. And so everybody had their own way of doing that.
Wow. So No Child Left Behind is actually leaving children behind, is what it sounds like to me.
Ironically.
In school districts.
Yes, ironically. All right, gentlemen, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Conversations, Trans Perspective. I am your host, LaVanna Forrest. We'll be right back with our guests, Christopher Dinkins and James Ford.
Still for no man. Gotta hide.
And we are back with Conversations from a Man's Perspective. I am your host, Levanna Forrest. James, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay, awesome. Now, we were talking about No Child Left Behind. Ironically, it seems that it is leaving children behind, as well as needed resources as well. But I wanted to share something with everyone that was written by Anna Duff Helms from the Charlotte Observer. James, you said, give me one moment, I just had it there, James. It says, Morrison urged Ford and five other finalists to tell their stories and reshape the public conversation about teaching. And you said, you have an opportunity to let people know the magic you enact every day on behalf of children. That struck home for me. Give me more detail behind that statement. Elaborate on that. You have an opportunity to let people know the magic you enact every day on behalf of children.
Sure. You know, at heart, I have to be honest. I consider myself an activist. You know, I'm very social and politically aware. And so I'm also not the type of person to sit around and talk about things and not do something about it.
Right.
And what I found is that in many ways, education is my form of activism. People complain, talk about the state of the world today, how things are so messed up, they rag on the youth. And when I got in front of kids for the first time in the seat of instruction, I realized, man, for 60 or for 90 minutes a day, I get to interact with kids. I get to cultivate the way that they view the world. I get to interact with them and learn from them. I get to introduce ideas. I get to hear their thoughts. And so on a daily basis, what goes on the ground level in a classroom is magical. It's paradigm shifting. I mean, my students are so brilliant. And for many of them, they've never been told that before. And so just to introduce them to their own intelligence by giving them certain assignments that they don't initially think they're capable of doing, and then watching their faces that they get it done on a high level. By engaging adult-level conversations with young people and hearing them articulate themselves and learn how to argue. These are the things that are being taught in my classroom so that it's not just really, it's not even about, this is my personal opinion, it's not even about my content as much as it's about the skills to learn. They're learning life skills, just how to be productive citizens, how to be adults that can think on their toes, how to put together thoughts. And how to really be successful. I love the opportunity I get every single day in front of kids. It's the best part of my day when I wake up. I mean, I really do wake up with a smile on my face. As soon as I get closer to school, I'm like, yeah, you know, it's on. You know, every single day it's like that. And, you know, some days they get the best of me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I don't want to make it like everything is roses, but this profession, I don't know how everybody else feels about the job they do, but this job right here, I know I'm affecting change. I'm changing the world in my classroom because the kids that come through my classroom, they're my contribution to society, and that's my form of activism. That's the way I'm changing the world, through them, and that's the way I see it.
Wow. And we can feel it, James. You're giving me goose pimples. Chris Dinkins. You said, we must prepare our children right now so they can handle the challenges of the world when they are adults. Immediate access to information, media, and electronic resources creates a shrinking globe. While the world seems to get smaller, the job competition pool is expanding. Our students will compete for jobs in a global marketplace. That's huge. I was talking with my sister, Leona, and she was just happened to mention that, you know, you're not just competing against your neighbor across the street. You're competing against your peers on a global map. So share with us, as director of Fairfield Career and Technology Center, give us some more of what you mean behind those words.
Well, and it's a lot of the same thing that James said. You know, I do love my job, and I love being able to work with kids and showing them that the world is bigger than the city we live in. You know, and unfortunately, I work in a small town that doesn't, you know, a lot of the people there don't have great resources. So unfortunately, we have a lot of students who may or may not leave the town. I mean, we're 20 minutes away from Columbia, and I've got a lot of students in high school who've never been to Columbia, couldn't tell me how to get there. You know, in my mind, that's a travesty. I grew up in a small town myself. But, you know, I wasn't world-traveled, but I knew how to get around. I knew enough. I learned enough in my classroom that I could figure out where South Carolina was on a map, and I knew what our neighboring states were, and I knew how to get you to Columbia if you asked me. But, you know, we owe it to our students to be able to expose them to all that the world has to offer. And where I am in career and technology education, we prepare students for jobs. Mm-hmm. And we've gone from preparing students for jobs to preparing students for careers. You know, teaching students that if you get a chance to do what you love as a profession, you know, they say if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life, mm-hmm. you know, because you will enjoy it. It won't seem like work to do. It won't be that, oh, man, I have to go to work today. It's, man, I get to go to work today.
Right.
You know, so in addition to giving you the best set of skills to make you employable, mm-hmm. we have to be realistic in who your competition is and going for those jobs. It used to be years ago when vocational education first got started in South Carolina that, you know, once you finish high school, if you had a set of skills and a tool belt and a smile and a firm handshake, you could go to work tomorrow.
Wow.
You know, you just show up at the job site and they were going to put you to work.
Yeah.
But you need a whole lot more than that now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with being the best coming out of your high school, being valedictorian or the best welder or the best whatever through certifications, you still need some extra skills and some extra training and some extra polishing. And you may not even know who your competition is going to be.
Right.
You know, people are competing. They're interviewing for jobs via Skype. You know, they're doing all these types of submissions for reports and having to write things up in terms of just the interview process. So our students need to be aware of that. They need to be aware of all that's entailed
mm-hmm.
because it's gone are those days that, hey, if you go to college, you'll get a good job. You know, now the only thing guaranteed from you going to college is possibly some debt. So you want to make sure that, you know, if you're going to take on that debt, understand that.
Yeah.
Know that this job comes, here's the salary scale. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in this field, here's the money you can make coming out of high school. In the same field, here are the jobs available. Here's the money you can make with 2 years of education. And then on to a 4 year if you want to go that route. So we make sure that students are well prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do we give them the skills, you've got to be able to market those skills on your own.
Right.
Because your teacher won't be there anymore to speak
mm-hmm.
for you. They can write a letter of reference, but, you know, in the end, you've got an interview. You have to show that you deserve that opportunity, that you're the best candidate, that somebody's got to be willing to take a shot on you, even if you are one of the youngest applicants.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, at 17, 18, 19, our students are competing against people who are 40 and 50 years old trying to find work and
right.
possibly have been looking for work for years.
Mm-hmm.
They're hungry. They will do whatever it takes. And they've got skills to prove that, hey, I can do this.
Right.
So we want our students to be prepared. We want them to make smart choices. We want them to be good citizens. You know, we want to raise people who are going to be able to take responsibility for what they do because ultimately one of these kids might be my neighbor.
Right.
I want them to be smart. I want them to be a good neighbor.
And with that, James and Chris, do you think that it would be beneficial for the career of technology and our basic academically design system be put together, merge it together? I mean, listening to the both of you, I would think all schools should have a career and technology center, not separate. Do you think that would even happen sometime in the future, or it would always be separated as it is now?
I think there needs to be a greater emphasis on what Chris is doing over there at the center. As a teacher, as obviously, you know, somebody who's matriculated through higher ed and had that college experience, it was great. But I think that, you know, as noble as college is, everybody's not going to college. And if somebody chooses
right.
to do something, enter into a vocation or career, that's no less noble. You know,
mm-hmm.
if they want to pick up a trade and become a welder, become a pipe fitter, become a carpenter, you know, we should be in the business of helping kids to discover ways to make a livelihood and to do
mm-hmm.
so with integrity. And we got to start integrating more career and technical educational programs in the schools. I think if you do that, you give people options instead of just lifting up this, you know, this ideal of everybody going to college. That's great, but that's not realistic. And we should be trying to help everybody find their way, no matter what that is. So if somebody wants to be a cardiologist or whether they want to be a cosmetologist, we should be in support of that and provide the resources to make that happen.
Exactly, especially with the rising cost of college. You know, and now the debate, is college really worth it? Is it overrated? Is some of the debates I've been hearing.
Good question.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think the career centers are definitely a good start for a lot of students. And part of what we really push is that the state of South Carolina has what each student is supposed to complete. It's called an individual graduation plan, which basically allows students to choose a major in high school. And it's not just the career and technology stuff that we teach at the Career Center, but there's also things for education, things if you want to go into mathematics or if you want to go into the legal profession. But basically, students kind of start thinking, you know, where do they want to go beyond high school? And it just gives them an extra set of courses in high school, kind of like the electives that you can take in a college level to support where their post-secondary goals are. You know, people kind of trip on, you know, are we locking these kids into majors at 16, 17, 14, 15? They don't even know what they want to do. And it's like they're not locked in. We're just trying to give them a little more insight to put them in a classroom that can speak more intelligently about, hey, if that's a career you want to pursue, here are some things you should expect. You know, a math teacher, most math teachers can't tell you what to expect from a criminal justice career. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, you know, a criminal justice teacher can't tell you what to expect from a biology career.
Right.
And so we want to have students be able to get some insight from people who understand the profession, understand the expectations of the career. Mm-hmm. So what we do at the Career Center is, we realize now Common Core, the introduction of the Common Core standards is requiring a lot more of students academically. But what the way we see it on the career and tech side is that now the academic teachers are having to do some of the same things that we've had to do in career and tech education for the last 40 years, and that's incorporate a great amount of skills and a greater amount of depth of understanding, not just teaching to the test or giving you, you know, we're going to touch on a lot of different things just to move on and complete the unit, you know, because we build skills in students. So now the academic teachers are responsible for building that same depth of skills, you know, with a variety of instructional practices and resources so that it's not just about, hey, we cover the chapter.
Right.
You know, and I think career and tech can be good for a lot of students because part of figuring out what you want to do is understanding what you don't want to do.
Exactly.
So at a minimum, you realize, like, oh, no, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we'll take carpentry students who are interested in becoming architectural engineers and prepare them for the field through career and tech education in high school. Because now, before you can design it, you understand how it's built. You've actually had a chance to build a small scale of it, so you realize how valuable it is to make sure that things line up the way they should. You know, so we definitely want to embrace the academic responsibilities of all high school education. You know, at one point, career and technology teachers used to say, I'm not a math teacher, I'm not an English teacher, why they got me doing this? But on the scale is, we are really teaching a whole lot of algebra in a carpentry class.
Right.
We just never called it algebra.
Mm-hmm.
You just call it building a house.
Exactly.
You know, but you've got to calculate the rise and the run of a set of stairs and the pitch of a roof, and it's all algebraic expression.
Exactly.
So now the teachers are going back and telling their students, you realize you just did algebra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're mixing paints, you realize that's chemistry.
Right.
You know, so students are starting to perk up to that and realize that, hey, you know, I'm not a dummy after all. I could actually do well in this class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but why don't they teach it to us like that in a math class or in a science class? You know, it's just the application of the information. If the students know how it applies, then they're more apt to use it and more apt to get into it.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you said that. Why don't they teach it like that in the math class? Well, I was reading a little bit about James, and he mixes up a little bit. I think, James, you were teaching imperialism in your history class, and you took some Skittles something or some Starburst and you tossed it. share that little experience with us, please.
Yeah, no problem. Precisely what Chris mentioned, I'm big on application. Especially in a field like social studies, we got to admit it's boring. I mean, it is. It's dead people and dates for the most part, and that doesn't entertain anybody. Well, maybe not entertain a few people, but not the majority of folks. So whenever I come up with a lesson, I try to draw the concept out and figure out a way to demonstrate that, to put that student in that situation. So it's one thing for me to tell you what imperialism is, how you write the definition down, but it's another thing for me to draw four squares on a floor and assign a student to each square and tell a student that this square is your nation. And I'll grab a handful of Starbursts and I'll say, these are natural resources. I'll assign somebody to drop them one at a time in the middle of that square, and whatever square of the four the resources end up in after the 15 are dropped, well, those are just the natural resources that your land is endowed with. That's not unfair. Some areas are more fertile. You know, Africa is a rich continent of natural resources. You know, northern parts of Europe don't have a lot of gold and a lot of oil and stuff. That's how it goes.
Uh-huh.
But then after a couple of rounds of that, I change the rules. And by the third round, I allow them to invade their enemy's territory if they can get to the resources first. And so what you notice is in the first round, everybody's all dignified and respecting everybody's boundaries, and nobody wants conflict. But then when you tell them they can play for keeps, they get to eat these Starbursts, they turn into absolute savages. You know, they be fighting, jumping on each other, and all kind of crazy stuff. And then when you debrief, you ask them, Now, is it okay for a nation to invade another nation and in order to acquire resources? And they'll tell you out of their mouths, no. But then when you push them and you say, well, you guys just beat each other up over some Starbursts. Then they're like, well, I was hungry. I said, well, you know, I guess the desire is great enough. I guess that warrants it being okay, you know. So then they understand the concept of imperialism, and furthermore, what drives nations to invade or colonize another nation in pursuit of its resources. And so I try to come up with exercises and activities like that to make the stuff come alive versus just, you know, looking through a textbook or writing down definitions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I love that. I love that. The way you said that, that's the way I was taught when I was a child. You know, but I thought that's been taken away from you all recently, more here of late. You have to stick to a certain program. And I know it's taken away a lot of creativity for a lot of teachers. And so with that, I'm going to ask you and Chris to paint a picture of your perfect school. If you were in charge of designing the education system, what will it look like to us? Chris?
Well, if I could design an education system, it would probably be along the concept of the neighborhood school, where all the schools were so close to each other, students could walk to change classes. It would probably look a lot like a college campus, and that the elementary school was here, and not necessarily along down the street, but, you know, almost on the same campus, where you could go from one school to the next. If you were, you know, that would help with the parents. You know, when they come, it's easy to park one time and you can walk from school to school. It encourages more visitation from the parents on the high school side because the parents always come to the elementary school to see their babies. And it would be comprehensive. I mean, comprehensive in terms of what it offers to students at all ability, academic level, you know, the challenging, the AP level courses, and even better than AP or the credit classes where they with the local college system to take a class simultaneously for high school credit and for college credit without an AP test at the end that students are sweating, you know, whether they remembered, you know, something from the first week of school and how that's going to give them a 2 or 3 or 4 on a test.
Right.
You know, it would give them a full set of academics. It would also allow career and technology education. It would encourage the arts for students who want to go into, you know, whether it's music or any kind of entertainment field. So it would be a really comprehensive environment. There would be a lot of community support. You know, we'd have access to local businesses for internships or partnerships for students to be able to go out and do some work-based learning. You know, they in turn, the community would come into the schools to speak to students on a regular basis. There would be a lot of visibility for everybody, so that builds that community sense in terms of what we all need, because it used to be that students were supported by a four-legged stool.
Mm-hmm.
And the four legs were the parents, their community, their church, and their family, extended family. You know, but unfortunately, we're basically down to two legs on that stool.
Oh, wow.
And a two-legged stool doesn't stand up well because you may or may not have your parents, you may or may not have church, you may or may not have community. You know, so you pretty much have the only constant is the school and the teachers.
Uh-huh.
So the parents may or may not get involved. So we're forced, like James said, having to do more with less. and we're trying to be all that we can be for the students.
Okay. All right. Awesome. I just saw like a mini mall, Chris, as you were describing. You know, when you go into a mall, there's a drugstore, you know, there's a sports store, there's the and everything, a very diverse atmosphere. And I like that. I can see that working. James, paint us a picture of your education system. If you were in charge, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I think I would incorporate much of what Chris just said. I would take the same approach that a lot of liberal arts colleges take, where everything is integrated. The arts, career tech, the humanities, it's encouraged with the focus on students being productive citizens. Because ultimately, what your education is, emancipation. The job is to give you freedom to be who and what you want to be. But in addition, I would integrate some mental health components, particularly in an urban school district. There's a certain set of sociological factors that come into play that preclude students oftentimes or make it difficult for them learning on a daily basis. And we don't address that piece. And we need to make sure that we deal with a holistic model of education that doesn't just focus on students making the grade, but students being well. I would like to have a full staff of licensed clinical social workers or therapists on hand and make therapy group and individual a part of the day, where students are encouraged to talk through, confide in individuals, and really debrief, because there's a lot of frustrations students are dealing with, and it makes it very difficult to pay attention and concentrate. And there's so much that in a school setting we can teach them, but so much that falls through the cracks, a lot of information gaps that simply do not get addressed. And so I think there needs to be a marriage between the mental health community and the educational community, and we take a more comprehensive approach to making sure that not only do you have the tools and the life skills necessary to be successful, but we're doing assessments and we're helping to integrate healthy ways to go about dealing with some of the circumstances that our students come from. I like the idea Chris mentioned about partnerships. Community partnerships are huge. I know there are a lot of individuals out here who and companies who would love to dedicate their time. You know, it'd be great. Nothing would be better than walking kids directly into careers post-secondary when they come out of high school. They can be able to thrive and be able to grow. But my overall thing is integration of values. We need to be good citizens, be law-abiding citizens, but be individuals who ultimately understand the virtue of what it means to be a leader, to have integrity, take care of our families, maintain our neighborhoods, raise our children correctly, look out for our neighbors. All of that is stuff that you don't necessarily get taught in school, but doesn't necessarily get taught in the household either. So there's a lot of information gaps for how to be prosperous on a whole. So those are some of the components I can see being a part of it. But naturally, I'm still developing that. But I'll let you know when I get the master plan in order.
Okay. You know, when you said integrity, boy, my hair just stood up on the back of my neck. You're right. That's something that you can't just teach that in the classroom. You know, that's a skill that's lost, I think. And I look forward to the next conversation where we could really implement a plan on just that alone. I think that would really help build a foundation for positive, productive young people. Okay, we're going to change the channel. We're almost out of time. Of course, Conversations from a Man's Perspective started with a panel of men sharing wonderful, intimate, needed details to an audience of women about dating and marriage and relationships and politics. So I'm going to ask you, Jane, what was it about your wife that made you say she is the one? You've got 30 seconds.
Well, okay, 30 seconds. Actually, it wasn't me who said she was the one. It was God who said she was the one.
Amen.
And almost those exact words. When I saw my wife, it sounds cliche and corny, but I really did hear God say that was the one. And I have a friend, a best friend, who could testify to it. This is before I even knew her name. And after I pursued her, we became good friends, I realized, number one, anybody who laughs at all my jokes, I need to keep around. But she's so sweet. You know, my wife is you know, unconditional lover, and really taught me how to be a better person, a better man.
Wow. Beautiful. I love it. I think you're the probably 50th man I've heard say, God told me. My last guest on last week said the same thing. He said, the Lord told me. That's beautiful. It's good that you listen. You know the voice. You know the voice, James.
That's right.
Chris, what was it that made you know that your wife was the one that you would spend the rest of your life with?
Well, I'm just trying to think of one at the moment that I knew she was going to be the one. We went from friends to being best friends in a matter of, it seemed like, days. So I'm just, I can't really put my finger on any one thing that it was that said she is definitely the one. In that early period, she saw me through a lot of difficult things, a lot of good times, a lot of bad times, and she was always there and just, you know, extremely beautiful. And, it was just fine as I don't know what. So it's kind of, that might have been it. But, I don't want to sound shallow, but,
Now, what man doesn't love eye candy, Chris? Yeah, that's beautiful. You guys, it has been an honor to have this conversation with the two of you. And I would like to invite you back. I invited another guest whom I think his passion and goals and his vision are in alignment with yours, James, and Chris. So hopefully I'll get to plan that show very soon. But I want to thank the two of you very much. We had Christopher Dinkins, Director of Fairfield Career and Technology Center here in Columbia, South Carolina, and James Ford. He is a educator at Garinger High School, located in Charlotte, North Carolina. James is Teacher of the Year 2013 for the district. I saw his beautiful smile in the newspaper, saw those gorgeous locks, and I love locks, and he just stole my heart. And so I thank the two of you for being my guest on Conversations from a Man's Perspective with your host, LeeVanna Forrest. Everyone, have a blessed week.
You're welcome.